In this session, we're going to actually go to the first of the ancient civilizations, traditionally as we understand it, called the Sumerians. So you'll find it in your what number is this one? Yeah, page 75, and then it is the edition. What is it? 16. So this is file 16 on the website. And Sumerians, interestingly, are not mentioned in the Bible. The word Sumerian does not appear. But the concept, of course, since this is the earliest of all societies, all of these various ancient Near East peoples owe something back to the Sumerians. Who were they? They came from what we call Sumer, the ancient land of Sumer, right at where the Euphrates and the Tigris River meet. And in that area is the city of Ur. They were the most significant people of antiquity and ancient Near East, but they are not mentioned in the Bible. And where did they actually come from? Depends who you talk to. Some say these are people who migrated from the Arab lands, and they migrated north. And yet what we find from the scripture is we find that everybody actually came from Ararat. And they migrated down, and the whole Tower of Babel incident is not something that a lot of others who study ancient belief systems, you know, hold to as authoritative. It does make sense that the civilizations of antiquity have all come from the areas where you find water. Not too surprising, is it? Did you know that people needed water back then? Of course they needed water. And so the four major civilizations of the world were centered around rivers. Starting from the east here, the Yellow River. Is that Huang? Huang River, Yellow River in China is where Chinese civilization developed. And then you move over to India. Indus and Ganges River is the heartland, basically, of ancient India. Mesopotamia, with the Tigris and the Euphrates, is the heartland, actually, of civilization, as we know from Scripture. And then the Nile River, it was the and is the longest river ever, the longest river in the world. And so the entire Egypt history is all centered in the Nile. Even today, I think the majority of the Egyptian population lives right around the Nile, and the rest of Egypt is not inhabited nearly as much. And that's because our basic needs have never changed, have they? People need water, they need food, and obviously that water is going to help produce food. They need community. So these are all... This is why Sumer ended up becoming so important, because it was right at where the Tigris and the Euphrates River actually came together. We know of it as Babylonia early on, or Old Babylon is kind of mixed in this idea. The geography is linked with Akkad, one of the cities there. And this is possibly the biblical Shinar. Genesis 10:10. I can't say that there's a link linguistically between Shinar and Sumer, but they do sound kind of similar, don't they? And obviously you've got arable land there, but some believe that these are actually together. So they entered Mesopotamia from the mountains, and whereas others will say they arrived actually from the Persian Gulf. And I find it interesting, when you go and you look at the geography today, you cannot assume it's actually the same geography we had back then. For example, here is the Persian area today. The Persian Gulf comes about right here. But it is believed, although Ur looks like it's a long way from the Persian Gulf right there, it is believed that the ancient coastline actually went all the way up to Ur. and that we have so many centuries of sediment coming down from the Tigris and the Euphrates that it's actually filled in all this land here. Pretty amazing to think about. So that it used to be the Persian Gulf used to actually go farther up north and to the west. So that if that's the case, then Ur would have been an ancient seacoast city, which would have been one of the reasons why it prospered so much, because it had both the fresh water coming from the Euphrates, and then it also had access to the sea. So that Euphrates still goes on in to there, but now we see the Tigris and Euphrates are actually meeting together, and we have a huge delta area there now. The early Sumerian, according to those who are not following, a strict chronology from Genesis 5, would say it would go all the way to about 3000 BC. Most of these cultures are looking to 3000 BC. It's very difficult in these four major civilizations, it's very difficult to know actually when these writings, ancient writings, came about, or what their ancient history was, I should say. Because we don't have writing actually going back farther than, let's say, 2500 BC, 2500, 3000 BC, they say. And when you dig up something, unless there's writing on it that will tie it on into a historical event, you really don't know how old it is without writing. Pottery is probably the best way to do it without having any writing, and that's very helpful. In any case, we have got three major periods of Sumerian history. And the Sumerian people were dominated by three major cities, Uruk, Arata, and Kish, and various leading figures. One will be familiar to you, Gilgamesh, because you've read the Epic of Gilgamesh. And these various cities was where ancient civilization developed. They were known for their ziggurats. And you actually see the concept of the ziggurat in other places around the world. Best we can tell is all that came from?
Egypt.
From Sumer, from Mexico, from Egypt, from the Tower of Babel. From the Tower of Babel incident. This idea of the Tower of Babel being some kind of circular structure going on up, it's more of a medieval idea. It's probably a ziggurat like this. And as peoples dispersed around the earth, they had it. They understood it. It's a very basic geometrical form anyway, isn't it? You know, a four-sided ziggurat. I mean, it's less complicated that way. They eventually disappeared, and their language is no longer used. But there are many dynasties, and I don't want to get involved in all the details here, except that the Sumerians were around 1750 BC, believed to be absorbed in the Semites, who were in that same area. And it's not super simple to know exactly where all these various all these things came about. We have the same problem today with regard to the Palestinians. Where did the Palestinians actually come from? This is a very important question, because it has political and religious and geopolitical ramifications, but we'll get into that in another session. Their temple had power over society, and they formed a secular government. And I'm not going to get into the various details, but you do have the notes on Sumeria, pages starting on page 75. I want to think more in terms of some of the more significant aspects of Sumer, what we actually owe to Sumer, that will help us understand the Old Testament. One of the most significant of them all is their language, which was an unknown language. And I put here on page 77, under writing, The Sumerian language is linguistically unrelated to the Semitic languages, although it does illuminate Akkadian. The earliest texts are still largely unintelligible, as are some features of the language throughout its history. However, some of this literature parallels the Bible. And we've already seen, we've read the Epic of Gilgamesh, and we will talk about the Code of Hammurabi that came about at this time as well. When we think of writing, even if you think of writing from a particular place, you have to realize that that writing actually changes. If you've read an old postcard, you ever get a postcard, something like that, that one of your family members have written like 100 years ago? Have you ever done that before? I've seen in some of our family archives postcards about 100 years old and tried to read them. I think, this is English. This is very difficult to read. The way people form their letters, we see that happen even just 100 years. And it's even said now, a lot of places, they're not even teaching cursive anymore. Because the computer has replaced cursive. So things are changing a whole lot faster now. But my point is that they changed back then as well. And so what actually started out, for example, as pictures, like the word for head is actually a picture of head. They say 3200 BC. The head actually shifted sideways within 200 years. And then rather than drawing it out, especially with cuneiform, which is taking soft clay and having a stylus making little lines in it, we end up doing things really quickly. You could draw the word head very quickly. The same thing for many other words. They became quite simplified. The rounded edges ended up becoming very, very sharp because of the use of the stylus. And but that's the first, this idea of this cuneiform, it's called, is written in clay, and this is how we understand what was happening at the earliest time. So the picture signs ended up turning into a wedge-shaped script. And in terms of education, we're not going to deal with a lot of education right now. We do have one session on education later on. But we have evidence of schools there in Sumerian society, which is quite different from what we find in Israel. Israel was not known for its schools. It was known for its parents teaching its children. And different types of literature. This is actually a medical text right here. 12-column tablets. And so we find things like the Atrahasis epic from 1650, creation and flood stories, talking about the gods regretting all the lesser gods, regretting so much work on the earth, so they create these lesser gods to do the work. Lesser gods create man to do the work. It's a very, very low view of man. The ziggurat has the idea of heaven or on being up at the top, atmosphere. Lil, does that sound a little familiar? On Lil, the name of their god.
Enki.
Yeah, their gods. It's a similar sort of thing here in Sumeria that you find over in the Syria-Palestine area, where their god has the same name as the place where the god is actually dwelling. Gilgamesh epic. This looks like a huge, huge piece of clay here. This Gilgamesh epic is about the size of this napkin. Seriously. That is blown up huge. They wrote the whole Gilgamesh epic on a very, very small piece. And what do you learn from that? Their eyesight was a whole lot better than our eyesight today. I mean, the deterioration, I'm not exaggerating here, but maybe because I hit 60, I think about this more. But the deterioration of the human body is something we don't really think about too much now compared to antiquity. But we talk about how we're stronger now because of medical science and all this sort of stuff. Yeah, people are living more longer now than they were, let's say, 50, 100 years ago, and we have all these advances. But in terms of our general health and these sort of things compared to before, I think people were much, much larger.
Yeah,
in antiquity, they were, yeah, they lived, certainly when you look at Genesis, they were living much longer. And since you've read some of their literature, On and Enki and Enlil and Ninhursag, these would be their polytheistic belief system. We have some of this actually coming back. The astral deities like Nanna, the moon god, and Inanna. You can find these pictures on the internet of more people starting to worship these ancient deities. And they see it as powerful to actually start, reenact worship that has been going on for thousands of years. That's the kind of paganism, or you might say revived paganism, that we see now. That's kind of a new development. Their idea of deities, though, the deities were located in different cities. So Ur would be associated with Nanna. And I'd have to just say that Abraham was one who had to give up worship of Nanna or sin also in this city in order to turn his back on that to worship the true God. It would have been a big, big deal, like many of us have had to go through now to turn our back on paganism, even in our own families. I know a lot of you can know exactly what I'm talking about. I've had to do this myself, as my parents think, even today, even though I've been in full-time ministry for 38 years now, this is still one of the realities I have in my life where my parents really just truly need to grasp the Lordship of Christ and understand that. They're glad that I have that I have enough to eat. They were fearful that if I became a missionary, I wouldn't have enough to eat. As you can see, I've got plenty to eat, just look. More of it's hanging over the belt, you know. And Abraham had to do that. Abraham had to say goodbye, really, to that whole family. The only ones he brought with him were his father and his wife and his nephew, basically. But he basically left all that behind. And there are many details here. If you go to the British Museum, you'll actually see some of these headdresses that are from Sumer. It's a fascinating thing to see. I've seen them in the British Museum. I've also seen them in Athens, Greece, where the archaeologists have dug up these sort of things that have been carted a long distance, obviously, but they brought down from these places. And look at that! Look at that headdress. I mean, that's quite ornate, and amazing to think that that headdress is 4,000 years old. More than 4,000 years old. let me skip and say, well, what's the point? What's the point of knowing all these things? The Sumerian math tables. Ooh, that's one thing you want to just skip, right? Unless you just love math. In terms of their relationship to the Old Testament, here's how the Sumerians affected Israel. So we'll have a section like this on page 78. We'll have a section like this that relates to contrasts or comparisons between these ancient societies and what we've got in the Old Testament. So the concept of mankind being created for the purpose of providing food for the lazy gods shows us quite a low perspective on people. Whereas in Scripture, we know that we are created in the image of God. Now, if we don't understand that, we today are going to be more like Sumerian belief systems. I'm talking about evolution, friends. If you subscribe to evolution, you're actually more like the Sumerian belief system that has a low perspective of people in contrast to what we have in the Scripture. God actually wanting to share his dominion with us, making us in his image. True worship, of course, we understand is polytheistic, but that's not how the Sumerians saw it, as we've seen with these many, many gods. And then the Sumerian gods obviously had a very flawed character and personality in contrast to what we find in the Old Testament of the Lord. These are some ideas. Maybe aren't quite parallel to what you find there on page 78. But the idea of city gods we see noted here, for example, in Genesis 11. Terah took his son Abram, his daughter-in-law Sarai, and his grandson Lot, his son Haran's child, and left Ur of the Chaldeans to go to the land of Haran. What did Abraham really understand of God? Even Melchizedek blessed Abraham by saying that he is blessed by God Most High, El Elyon. And Abraham later says, I am solemnly promised the Lord, God Most High, creator of heaven and earth, that I will not take a single thread or sandal thong from among you in responding to the king of Sodom. What's that?
This Melchizedek is a curious
king. Yeah, the Melchizedek one is...
He's a very curious
king. Yes. I won't get off on Melchizedek right now, but quite an interesting one. But the three C's of Sumer, maybe this is a more helpful way to say it, are civilization. This is where civilization actually came from in terms of urbanization and people actually living together in cities. Another key development is cuneiform. That's point 6C on page 78. Cuneiform put their life and culture in the clay, and clay is a very good substance, you know, that lasts centuries. So, and then this concept of city gods. So, but of all three of these, we see the concept of city gods also in Palestine, where different gods had different cities, and this kind of makes its way on into the New Testament too, where the Canaanites are trying to get the Israelites to come out of the hills, say, oh, their gods are the gods of the hills. If we can just get their gods down here on the plain, then we'll be able to defeat them. And having such a limited understanding of God was obviously to their detriment. But of all the greatest contributions, writing was Sumer's greatest contribution. Because we see how they had the most ancient form. The Chinese will debate this, I guess, with them, to say that Chinese was older than the cuneiform of Sumeria, but or maybe around the same time. The other thing that they are known for is that they were the first city-state. So you Singaporeans, you owe more to Sumer than you actually probably realized, because the city-state concept comes from Sumer. Where you have the king and the temple boss over a council of elders and then the free adult males. This is really the earliest form of government that we know of in society. The other thing quite important was the invention of the wheel. At least the being able to take the concept of the wheel and make the wheel impact all of society. Because inventing the wheel ended up inventing a wheel that formed pottery. When you've got a wheel and you put clay on top of it, there's plenty of clay there in Mesopotamia between these two rivers. then they were able to form pots and all kinds of things, and that really led to far more advanced civilizations than you had in other places at that time. It led to the ziggurat, and anyway, so there's some of the thoughts regarding Sumer. Now, I have a blank page here on page 80 that I'm just calling Lessons from Sumer. What do you learn from this? How does this help you understand more of what you're actually seeing in the Old Testament? And what does Abraham coming from this area say to us? What lessons do you take home from the reading you've done and what we've just talked about now in Sumer? All right? Here's my opportunity to let you talk to somebody next to you again, okay? What do you take away from this? Go ahead and write that down there. You've got a whole page there for page 80, and then I want to hear from you all in a little bit, okay? So pair up once again. You guys need another set of notes? There's an extra one too. So what's your takeaway? And if you're listening on the website, I would encourage you to think through these various principles here of who the Sumerians were and what your society owes back to Sumer. How does it actually impact you looking this far back? Think of one thing you want to share with the class, all right? And then we'll kind of come together. So what's not a Okay, friends, we just have a few minutes left. Any of your thoughts? What do you take away from understanding about this? Did you hear a good insight from somebody next to you? Peng, did you? From Clevy? Okay. Do you want to say it or do you want him to say it? All right, let's turn it. Clevy, do you want to share what you're thinking in that regard?
It's more of a question.
Okay, what's the question?
Like, for me, it was remarkable that Abraham had no prior concept of who God is. I mean, the God of Yahweh, the God of the Bible. And he...
How did Abraham get his concept of God coming from such a pagan civilization?
So it must have been a personal revelation.
Yeah.
That he recognized that this is God.
Yeah.
And the rest are...
So God spoke to him directly. You know, you wonder, did the Lord really want to get other people's attention too? But anyway, that's a whole other issue. But God truly did choose Abraham. And, you know, everybody must have thought Abraham was crazy. In fact, I've seen it portrayed in some films like that, where Abraham's father and his wife say to him, how is it that you can just place your trust in this nameless, faceless God? He doesn't have a name, and there's no idol to him. We don't even know what he looks like. And you say he speaks to you? No wonder why Hebrews 11 looks back at Abraham and says, this was definitely a man of faith. He knew that God was speaking to him. And he knew God was telling him, say no to all this, honestly, craziness that he'd been taught. I'm being real blunt with you guys, but you know, you and I, we are taught well-meaning craziness by people who love us. I'm talking about our parents. Talking about my parents. I never have doubted my parents' love for me, but I've doubted some of the things they've taught me. That I have come from primordial slime. And then it's all come together and I have this amazing body. Well, I don't mean my body's amazing and yours is not. But I mean, yeah. Gavin, what's your thought?
You should have some higher concept, right? Because otherwise it would just debunk the whole order train.
Maybe Abraham did have a prior concept of God. Where did he get it? Were there other writings that were...
Because when Abraham was alive, Noah and Shem was likely also to be alive still, following the timeline. When Noah died, when Shem died, his grandfather was Shem, right? And so they most probably have this concept of Yahweh, but apparently... the rest of the descendants might just go together.
When we looked at the taking a straight chronology of Genesis 5, you really have, like I said before, only three retellings of the creation story.
Yes.
From Adam to Methuselah to...
So then what does that say about the other entire civilization who had just come out of the ark 400 years ago and created all this?
It says that craziness and nonsense can come about within 400 years. I mean, if how long does it take for craziness and nonsense to come about? Can it happen? Can it happen faster than 400 years? I dare say it can happen in 400 seconds. I've seen it. I've heard it before, and so have you. Yeah, Lydia, what's your thought?
I wonder this question about our lifespan in view of this. Because in olden time...
Okay, let's turn our attention, Lydia, about lifespan. You mean ours being so short now?
Yeah, because when I was looking at this, there's maybe it's a crazy thought, like 6 minutes come true. Because to me, it's that previously when people got a lot long span, so that there is the oral transitions of truth. But today, I don't think God needs us to live for 900 years to convey the message because there's a lot of written form. So the lifespan is
that's a
not
good point.
Anymore. So, and also, I guess, yeah.
God allowed people to have longer lifespans when there was no writing.
Yes.
And now that we have writing, we have shorter lifespans.
And also because God knew, they do not know that they can't. Why they can live life long span? Because they eat organic food, they have no pollution, they don't have all these things that are happening.
Probably they live longer for all of the above. They didn't have a lot of the things that we have today that shorten our life. I don't know if I'd say in Ur there was no stress, you know, but but those are interesting thoughts. So. Yeah.
Creations and so on come. Because even when we look at temples and we go to different countries, even in Israel, the temple of God is very much like Chinese temple.
Yeah. Now, on that regard, let me say, don't think of oral tradition as being negative. We normally think of oral tradition, oh yeah, oral tradition, so negative, but writing, oh, so good. Friends, you can transmit things orally, you can transmit truth orally, and you can transmit heresy by written means. We take it by faith that the oral tradition that came to Moses, and he's writing this around 1500 BC, but he's writing about 1,000 years previous. We take it by faith that the oral tradition that came to him was accurate. We're also taking it by faith that there were other oral traditions, as we noted earlier, 270 versions of the global flood story that were not accurate, but they had some common elements. There was a global flood, saved by a boat. The people who were in the boat were from the same family. There's a lot of these things that are actually... you should expect some of the elements to come through correctly and some of them to come through erroneously. And we do take it by faith that the tradition that came to Moses...
And especially for Moses' writings, God inspired.
Yeah, was by divine revelation.
Yeah.
And you have to take that by faith even in Genesis 1. Because as I noted earlier, Adam wasn't there for day one of creation. He had to learn from God what had happened prior to his own creation. Some final thoughts. God brought Abram out of his home in Sumer to give him a new start. God could have done his revelation with him there. He chose not to do it. And Abraham's training for rural life in Canaan was in the most advanced civilization of his day, ancient Sumer. Now, does that not seem crazy to you? What's my point here regarding God bringing Abraham out of his home in Sumer to give him a new start? God often moves us physically to bring us into new avenues of his will. I bet you have a story that can illustrate that in
yes.
your life.
Yes.
I can tell you my story about how I trusted Christ and I had all my old friends around me at age 13. God said, I'm going to pick you up and I'm going to move you to a new school in the next city over. That's what happened to me. Nobody knew me in that next city except for two girls from my church. I had a completely new start. That changed my life. I said, Lord, I want to be known as a Christian in this school. I want to be known as your representative. And that truly changed my life. That was everybody knew, especially by the time I graduated from high school, that this guy, Rick, was a Christian. And God set my whole life trajectory on a new path by moving me. Maybe he's done the same for you. And maybe God trains us to do his will, but he doesn't mean to ever over-educate us.
What does that mean?
Like, know too much.
God trains us to do his will, but this doesn't mean he over-educates us. Keep growing, keep learning. Abram was from the most advanced civilization of his day, and yet God said, for you, the rest of your life, you're going to live in tents. Because I have a plan for your life. You're going to be the father of a whole nation. And by the way, yeah, I know, you don't even have a son yet. Your wife's been barren for years and years. God's ways are not like our ways. Why would he take Abram from, that's like advanced Singapore, and take him and shift him and move him to a very, very rural area? I can't say I know why. Except that God certainly tested Abram's faith in doing that. We understand that better by understanding the Sumerians.
So, I mean, but